This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run begins, and we're going to go all the way up to 10 a.m. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Julian Ng. Good morning, Julian.
Good morning. How are you guys?
I'm fine, and I think you're referring to me in the plural only because you're also thinking of Timothy Kang.
And there, to everyone out there.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. It's not just the three of us in this room. It's
yeah,
the whole
we're
Klang Valley.
We're having a big conversation here.
It's the Klang Valley's biggest conversation. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. On the breakfast
somewhere before.
Yeah, it's not exactly. It's derivative, I think is the way you put it. All I've stolen is I'm plagiarizing. Breakfast Grill today, Julian. You'll be speaking to Mark Thirlwell.
Yes.
He's the chief economist with Austrade, which is the Australian Trade and Investment Commission, which is an agency of the Australian government, is it?
Yeah, I think I would put it as a kind of METI, but not quite for Australia. And they use this to, it's slightly beyond a PR job. They use this to promote investments into Australia. And they have a few focus areas, education being one of them. And I think this will be a very interesting interview for the kinds of lessons that Malaysia can learn from it, because Australia is such a big trading partner of Malaysia, and we send a lot of our children over there to study as well. And, you know, being resource rich in the past and benefiting from high commodity prices in the past, how will Australia move forward in this new the new challenges of the global economy?
So when you say it's like METI, METI is a ministry and has like policy powers. Does the commission have the same powers?
Very much so. Full support of the government and the law, and having the kind of funding prowess behind it as well.
Okay, so that's coming up after the 8 o'clock news on the Breakfast Grill. Mark Thirlwell, chief economist with Austrade. Now, after the 8:30 news, we're going to be looking at the Donald Trump Xi Jinping meet in Mar-a-Lago. How do you say that? It's Mar-a-Lago. Mar-a-Lago.
Mar-a-Lago.
Mar-a-Lago. Mar-a-Lago. Anyway, it's a resort in Florida.
I don't know if it's a resort or so much as it being Donald Trump's house.
No, I believe Obama used to go there as well.
Okay.
Right? So this is a kind of a presidential retreat. And if you remember, in the campaign, Donald Trump complained about the number of times Obama went. But Trump has since gone, you know, multiple times.
It's owned
times.
By Trump, though. It's since 1985. This
oh, is it?
Is a place that's been
but
owned
didn't
by...
didn't Obama go there as well?
Yeah, but possibly... It's a location that's open to the public, especially if you have the money to pay for having meetings there. Right. Very sumptuous, very impressive looking place. So
it's a resort, huh?
Yeah, resort. Maybe more like also a U.S. Register of Historical Places, but owned by Donald Trump. So it proves that he's a very rich man. One of those signs that he's a very rich person with a lot of money.
Oh, it's an estate and national historic landmark in Palm Beach, built between 1924 and 1927 by heiress and socialite Marjorie Meriwether Post. Interesting. Okay.
Thank goodness for Wikipedia.
And the internet. Yeah. I would have had to go to a library and research this before I could make a comment.
Yay for net neutrality.
Yes, well, that's under attack, thanks to Donald Trump as well.
Exactly.
So we'll be speaking to Prashant Parameswaran in Washington, D.C. He's the associate editor, he's an associate editor at The Diplomat, to get a sense of the many issues that the two presidents are going to discuss. It's going to be on the table. And this, of course, all happening under the shadow of that missile test by North Korea. They just recently shot a missile into the Sea of Japan, raising alarms in Japan and also, I think, in the region. So that's going to be a major issue, I think, that's going to... Because if you remember, Julian, I think Donald Trump's, you know, administration has come out to say that China has not done enough. I mean, China is seen as a major stakeholder in, or at least a voice in what's happening in that region, including North Korea. And so, you know, they're saying, well, China's not going, has not done enough. And if China doesn't do enough, we'll just go ahead and do something. And I think that's been the message from the US.
Yeah, I think beyond just splitting the bill of global defense by the two biggest economies in the world, I think it's a good thing that these two economies are talking. And short of Donald Trump's xenophobia, right? This is a good thing. I think it's a good thing that these two guys are sitting down together and talking about it. Just to make the world a more peaceful place. I think we are having our own little tiffs here and there with China as well, with their expansionist kind of attitudes in the region, in the South China Sea, and that's worrying as well. It'd be interesting to see the kind of stances that the U.S. would take about China's activities in the South China Sea and also with Taiwan as well.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the grandstanding that the U.S. has done, I mean, against the, as you put it, the kind of somewhat aggressive expansionist moves that China's made in South China Sea. Remember, Rex Tillerson came out and said, you know, something to the, this is Secretary of State, saying something to the effect that, we won't allow China to expand further in South China Sea. And it raised alarms about whether America was going to be in direct conflict. And then again, with this statement about North Korea, because, you know, North Korea, China's North Korea's biggest, largest rather, trading partner. And so the idea is China has a lot of heft, a diplomatic heft. And the question is, why are they using it? And, you know, maybe this has got something to do with, I think, the nature of the regime in North Korea. But so beyond the rhetoric, I guess the question is, what are the realities of what exactly is going to happen? Whether this, America acting unilaterally is a reality or just the bluster and the rhetoric, you know. So I think that a lot of issues there are.
And I have a feeling that this talk is going to have a kind of modulating effect on Donald Trump's attitude, because it will make him want to become more presidential, you know, which he has been trying very hard to project since he took over. But this China, this is the second largest economy in the world that you're talking about. And when these two hits come together, it would have a kind of modulating effect, because you won't be able to say or do whatever you want to do, right?
Well,
it might have a positive effect coming out of it. I'm just speculating.
Yeah, it could. I mean, yeah. It could. And, you know, I think the hope that Donald Trump's will change his stripes are probably founded on shakier ground than maybe hoping that the institutional arrangements in the U.S. Really constrain him. And I think that's what we've seen in his failures in Congress. I mean, it's just not the institutional
arrangements. The healthcare bill that was killed.
Yeah, the attempt to repeal and replace Affordable Healthcare Act. And so, you know, so those things also, I think, will perhaps, as you say, you know, moderate his the kind of stances he's taken publicly. So all that, we're going to have a quick talk with Prashant Parameswaran, who's in Washington, D.C. at about 8:33 a.m. in the morning. Now, today is also Ringgit and Cents Day, a day where you get to understand something a little deeper about your own personal finances. And you'll be speaking to Trevor Mark Patterson, who is a partner at Screen & Company.
That's right. On the new bankruptcy bill, the proposed items to be inserted in the bankruptcy bill, which tries to make bankruptcy a lot more friendlier. A lot friendlier, because we are seeing a rising number of bankrupts, and these are just people on the street, normal people. These are not big corporations. These are the small fishes. So trying to make this a little bit friendlier, trying to get you out of the bankruptcy status a little bit easier, not pinning the weight of bankruptcy on social guarantors, for example. If you guaranteed someone for a study loan or buying a home, you would not be under such tremendous pressure to be you know, declared wrongful if you're a guarantee, if you're the guarantor and then the guarantee runs away with the money.
Oh, I see.
I think that, so I want to look into the various facets of this. For example, will that take away the teeth of the law, right? Can you just willy-nilly become somebody's guarantor and not have any responsibility for it?
That's right. Yeah. The fear that this has no consequence, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's fascinating. It's fascinating that more people of a different category are becoming bankrupt. And the question is, what is the cause? I mean, is it the people over leverage? Is it because of housing?
There is that. Over leverage, living beyond your means and buying into assets which are not growing, like motor cars and, buying properties that are too expensive. But I think also a growing segment that invests into small businesses because of the challenging economic situation, they're forced to do something else. And then they open a small business and find that that challenges them as well, and they become strapped for cash. So there is that. There is that part of the economy of people trying to make ends meet with a new business.
Oh, okay. Well, we just quick look at the news, Julian. Malaysia has gotten some international spotlight. But again, for all the wrong reasons, the BBC World Service website ran the story of Tasik Gelugor MP Shahbudin Yahya's view on rape and child marriages. The headline read, Malaysia MP okay for rape victims to marry their rapists. Now, and we're going to be talking about this again this morning because this story appears in at least two newspapers, Sina Harian and I believe The Sun. We also yesterday ran a poll asking if there was any sense, people have any inkling that there may be some social, cultural, economic sense or rationale in what he said. Some 455 people participated in our poll. 95 said no and 5 said yes.
95%.
95%, rather, yeah. Yes. 95% of the 455 voters said they don't think
that's
anything.
That's a landslide. That's an overwhelming majority of people who disagreed with the MP.
Yeah, and in fact, he's come out to defend himself, saying he was misquoted or he was taken out of context.
Which is lame.
It's
totally lame. Yeah. I'm sorry. But, every time something silly is being stated in the open, in the press, these politicians just hide behind something that's very contextual, like saying, you took my statement out of context, but you know that you are spotlighted every day and you're leaders of the community. You should be really careful about what you say so that it doesn't, things that you say are not taken out of context.
Yeah, he actually had a press conference in Parliament, but he gave it exclusively to RTM. He barred the other press from coming out. And when he did come out from that press conference, apparently there was a barrage of questions from the other media that were trying to, doorstop him. One journalist, apparently, according to one report, asked him if he had a daughter. now, Amanah MP Siti Maria has also come out, and she just took exception to one of the things that he said, saying, that some girls look like they're, some younger girls look like they might be 18, and therefore, he says, are physically and psychologically prepared for marriage. She said this is, not true. He says that, in fact, just because they look 18 doesn't mean they're psychologically or prepared for marriage. But she has an interesting take, Julian. She went on to say that, I don't blame him totally because the law allows it. I'm not saying he's right, but that's the mindset of Malaysians today, of Muslims today. And she said, in the old days, daughters were raised to get married, to get a husband. There was no future but to be a mother and a grandmother. But in the current context, girls are raised to be independent, to have their own self-determination. And so we have to adjust to that. So that's Siti Maria from Amanah. Amanah, of course, is the splinter party from PAS. So I think this controversy is not going to die down just yet.
Yeah, but I'm just worried that it's a reflection of something that is more sinister if MPs or community leaders are allowed to get away with such statement. And I'm not saying that they should be crucified, although like literally, although that would be a good idea. But
Be careful what you say. You're a public figure too.
You know, we should really go all out to take umbrage at such statements, right? We should not let them get away so easily with this kind of statement.
He's been attacked by many members of his own party. So he was defended by one member, one UMNO assemblywoman in this case, in Penang. But by and large, and some of the big guns have come out. We spoke about Raman Dahlan's statement, and some of the newspapers this morning are replete with ministers from the Barisan National Government calling on him to retract his statement. So there is outrage even on his side of the political divide, and that's probably
a good thing. That's a good thing.
That's a good thing, yeah. We'll be back with more news and stories after this, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Morning Run continues, and that was Life on Mars by David Bowie, a track from 1971. I love David Bowie, I must say. You know, it's one of my favorites. And I love this work as well. I mean, I think coming from his kind of glam rock period, but I'm not going to say too much because I probably get that wrong. I also, by the way, Julian, got something else wrong. So that's Julian who's laughing in the corner there and coughing, making me cough. It's contagious. When I said Obama went on holidays, it wasn't to Mar-a-Lago. Mm-hmm. It was, in fact, to Hawaii. But in the...
You didn't get copies of his diary. Obama.
Well, yeah, I think where I made the mistake was the White House was justifying Donald Trump's many visits to this resort in Florida by saying that Obama had done so as well, but not to this resort. He had done so in going to Hawaii. But of course, he didn't do it as many times as Donald Trump has, and so early on in his administration too.
Yeah, I think that the what's contentious about this is that it's owned by Mar-a-Lago is owned by Donald Trump himself, and you wouldn't catch Obama going to a resort that he owns Obama himself owns.
Yeah, Donald Trump really has very few scruples. I don't think he sees this as a conflict of interest.
He's pushing the envelope on conflicts, right?
The fact that his wife lives in Trump Tower and it's costing the American taxpayer huge amounts at the same time that he's saying government spends too much money. So, well, there you have it. But anyway, that's an American conversation. I'm Sharad Kutin, Julian Ng. Just a quick look at some of the news that's really making headlines. Syria and the gas attack, chemical weapons, a lot of conflict in the UN as to who's responsible for that. Russia saying that, in fact, it is the responsibility of rebels. Russia saying that a rebel-held camp that was hit contained chemical weapons, and that's the source of the attack, whereas others saying that the Assad regime actually is responsible. So quite contentious in...
So what is this draft about, draft resolution about?
Well, to censure Syria. So Russia is trying to resist that, Russia backing the Assad regime. South Africa, the saga continues. The embattled president, Jacob Zuma, has so far resisted pressure to resign. And this, he's been helped recently by his own party that, at least in one of the central decision-making bodies, have stood by him. And by standing by him, they put themselves up against the South African Communist Party, which is a coalition member of the South African government, and trade union, COSATU. Others have also come out against the president for sacking the much-respected finance minister, Pravin Gordhan, so who's also from the ANC. So, I mean, so that saga continues. Very interesting. Do you find the South African story interesting, especially with the Gupta family there in the mix?
Yeah, I do find it interesting, but for the kind of lessons that it can give us, Malaysia, I mean, it's very similar in many ways because it's about a head of state firing an up-and-coming finance minister. We've heard that story before, right?
Yes, I see where you're going with this. Very interesting.
Who knows what's next? Jail time or the forming of a new political era for South Africa?
Yeah, well, taking us back to the the late 90s there. Thank you so much, Julian. The music takes you all the way back to the early 70s. Julian taking us back to the late 90s and the Asian financial crisis in 1997. Oh, such... I almost have a tear in my eye. The nostalgia is overwhelming. Coming back home, since you brought us back home, Malindo Air denies the strip check, a report that came out in the Malay Mail, and has issued some statements. Julian, what do you make of this? This is just like a storm in a teacup. I mean, do you take these stories seriously?
Yeah, I think I would put this almost at the same level of that Tasik Lugo MP saga, the kind of shenanigans that go on behind the scene that's hidden from us normal people. You know, is this the tip of the iceberg of what's happening in hiring practices? I mean, I know that AirAsia has very quickly and cleverly come up with a response with one of their ads to hire people. And what did they say, Sharad?
Yeah, we won't ask you to strip down, just zip up and be part of the world's best low-cost airline team.
So there are many
capitalizing
issues.
On Malindo's PR woes.
Exactly. So on the surface, we all know that this is wrong. I mean, this is gender equality. This is harassment. This is discrimination. It shouldn't be done. I mean, you should hire a person on the basis of their ability, their merits, rather than how they look.
Okay, so this is the key thing, Julian. In some industries, that wouldn't apply. So if you were a model, for instance, you can be discriminated on the basis of how you look. I believe that some retail outlets, is it Fitch and Abercrombie? When the ones they have only... Abercrombie and Fitch,
and they
where
been,
they only have good-looking
And they have been vilified
men.
By the public.
But okay, so should that part of the market and those strategies be regulated by government, or should we just allow it? So if people don't like what Abercrombie and Fitch are doing, they don't want to be served by good-looking men and women with abs, then they should just take their business somewhere else. I mean, why should we, be regulated?
No, I don't think this should be regulated at all. I think that it is correct for members of the public to come forward and express some degree of outrage with what is happening and vote with their feet, vote with their money. I think that's a good thing. What's happening here is a good thing. But my fear is that is to ask whether this is the tip of the iceberg and whether corporations are using their power over the small guy to make them do things that are verging on the illegal, right?
Yeah. So this is interesting. I'm going to quote something from the Public Relations Communications Director, Rajasaidi Rajasamrin of Malindo. And he says, we need to see if the applicants have scars, pimples or tattoos that can be seen through the uniform. Our flight attendants wear corset inside, and if it's covered by the corset, then it's okay. So there is this premium place on the kind of image that staff in Malindo work. And so, but you know, is it necessary? I mean, would you feel more comforted in being served by somebody who is pretty or somebody you think is competent, though that might not show outwardly?
When you make a flight, you want a competent person just to make the journey so much more efficient and so much more comfortable. Really, you don't really have to be served by somebody beautiful. I think grooming is important. Grooming is important, and the grooming can paper over perhaps all these very extremely minor blemishes of the body. But to really go to the extent of body checking somebody during an interview, that's to me just plain wrong.
Okay, so the Malay Mail this morning has as its front page new rules for cabin crew intake. The Transport Ministry is intervening in this. So I think there you have some sort of government intervention to kind of regulate what's happening.
But sure, there is also the other matter of whether this is just the account of one person or whether this is actual policy of Malindo. We don't have, for example, accounts of other people who have gone through the same ordeal.
Referring to the Malay Mail story, was it based on just one source? I don't know, because if you look at the statements coming out of Malindo, they didn't actually deny initially the account. I mean, they in fact justified it, saying this is as they believed, and that this individual who's the spokesperson said that they believed that this was an industry-wide practice. It was not just Malindo that does it. And then they went on to explain why they do it. So there wasn't a denial that these checks happened. So I think that, you know, whether it's one person or many sources, that clearly was happening. But anyway, we'll be back with more after this. We have the first news bulletin of the day, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Morning Run continues. Julian Ng and myself, Sharad Kutin, with you until 10 a.m. It's now just 35 minutes past 6. Oh, just a bit of news for those of you driving and have to put petrol in your cars. The weekly retail price for RON 95 and RON 97 will go up 3 cents to 16 cents per litre and 2 cents to 2.43 cents per litre, respectively. So those are the new prices for RON 95 and RON 97, while the price of diesel will retail at some 2 ringgit and 8 cents per litre, effective today.
Yep, this is the result of that new regime where petrol prices would be priced weekly, and it's not attracted. It's attracted its fair share of controversy. People are still discussing this as to how this will affect the lifestyle. I think one of the main contentions is whether there would be a different pricing for the rural area and the city, right? Because the distribution costs would be much higher to deliver into the rural areas than the city.
So, Julie, I mean, as somebody who drives, I don't have a car, and so I don't really sense.
You don't even have a driver's license, do you?
No, I don't. And if you gave me a car, I'd only be able to push it from the back. So, okay.
Very modern. You're very modern.
I know.
Like one of those millennials who have decided
like
not to buy a car.
I feel a bit like Fred Flintstone, actually. All I could do is if I get a cardboard cutout, I could, like, you know, pedal with my feet. But, I mean, coming back to you, are these differences in prices significant in terms of your paycheck? I mean, in terms of your wallet, rather. If it goes up by 3 cents for the week, is it significant?
I don't think it's significant. I think it's just subsumed into the whole discussion of our cost of living and whether we can afford it right now. As we know, inflation is creeping up very sharply. In the beginning of 2016, it was just 1.something%. Today, at the start of the year, it went up to above 3%, and now analysts are predicting 4-5% in the coming months. So it's a question of whether we can afford the cost of living, the rising cost of living in Malaysia. The world says that inflation is a good thing because it's a sign of a recovery in a global economy, it's a sign of expanding growth in the global economy. But, you know, coming back down to earth, is that really a good thing for us? That's the big question, right? Mm-hmm. But I also made a mistake in characterizing the whole story. I think this is just about a weekly retail prices. The other point is about whether people would benefit from a freely floating prices, right? Different petrol stations charging prices charging their own prices after taking into account their own costs.
Do you think that's desirable?
Yeah. I think so. I think businesses should be allowed to freely do what they need to do.
Okay. Talking about businesses, Iceland's parliament is examining a bill that would require companies to prove they offer equal pay to employees. This is in order to tackle the gender pay gap. So while Iceland ranks top of the list of gender in the global gender gap index, Julian, followed by Norway, Finland and Sweden, it still has a gender pay gap of some 17%. So they're going to push for this that would actually make it the incumbent upon companies to prove that they're not discriminating against women. I mean, do you think this is a good move?
It is a kind of affirmative action policy, but from an economic policy point of view, some economists would argue that you just should go with meritocracy rather than affirmative action. Affirmative action as a policy cannot be sustained into the long term. But if the situation is so dire in the short term, and if the government wants to directly intervene to equalize pay in the short term and give equality a little bit of a nudge, then maybe it's not a bad idea.
Okay, so we're going to... I'll put this out on a Twitter poll, and you can tell us what you think governments should do. Should they intervene in this kind of really firm way to tackle the question of the gender pay gap?
Yeah, I think this is also relevant to Malaysia in terms of not only the gender bias that exists in Malaysian pay, but also this continuing affirmative action policy under the Bumiputra policy, ethnic-based policy in Malaysia. Because when you do affirmative action, it's usually for minorities, right? But now the question is whether we can continue to bear costs of affirmative action policy for the majority, and whether we should move forward into a new era of a more meritocratic-based policy.
Yeah, well, then it opens up this whole other possibility. If you're going to do the gender gap in terms of pay, or pay in terms of the gender gap, and what about other social categories, right? Able-bodied versus disabled-bodied. Do you want the government to insist disabled-bodied or differently able-bodied is another way of putting it, more PC way of putting it. Should they also, have this kind of affirmative action? So many questions opened up by this kind of social intervention by governments. All of us, because all of it leading to a better world. And Phil Collins poses that question. Another Day in Paradise, he asks. And we'll be back with more after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.